So I was having a conversation with one of our staff members about documentation, and he had come over from a in-network practice that he was working at, and he was talking about just how long it would take him to document and click through and the workflow and how just how time-consuming it was and how much easier it's been with the software that we use, which is PT Everywhere. And I know for us, we're very, very aware of sort of time leaks within our staff and our own schedules. And it's just one of the worst things you can do is just waste time on things when you could be doing them more efficiently. One thing for us is we have to document. It's something we need to do, and you need to do it as efficiently as you possibly can, because that's where you're going to save a lot of your time. You know, we were seeing our staff members save upwards of an hour a day as far as cleaning up his documentation, making it more efficient. What if you got an hour of your day back just from documentation? What if all of your staff did the same thing? Highly recommend you take a look at PT Everywhere. It's been a huge time saver for us and really has made a big difference in our efficiency of our practice. You can check them out at pteverywhere.com. I think you're going to really like what they have to offer.
So here's the question. How do physical therapists like us, who don't want to see 30 patients a day, who don't want to work home health, and have real student loans, create a career and life for ourselves that we've always dreamed about? This is the question, and this podcast is the answer. My name is Danny Matei, and welcome to the PT Entrepreneur Podcast.
What's going on? Doc Danny here with the PT Entrepreneur Podcast and Facebook group. We got Andrew Millett of Move Strong Physical Therapy up in Hudson, Mass. I was just up that way. We were talking about it. I had a cool little trip to Acadia National Park in Boston. We got to see, you know, the Freedom Trail and all the, you know, the shit that we did back in the Revolutionary War, which is really cool. But that's a cool town, man. I really enjoyed my time. Are you from there originally?
I grew up just about 30 minutes west, actually not far from where my facility is now. Never actually lived in the city limits, had a semi accent for a period of my life. But no, it's always a fun city to go to. And even if you're from here, and I've actually never been on the Freedom Trail. So you're better than me.
I guess, is that like a touristy thing to do? Is that just like, if you're not from here, you do it?
It's like elementary, middle school field trip, and you're not from here type of thing. Like, yeah, there's a lot of like definitely tourist things to do, but I know I'm lesser of a Bostonian, I guess.
Well, I tell you, man, what was interesting was to honestly like think about just like the duration of time that some of those things took, right? Because like for them, right, they they decide, okay, well, we don't want to follow these taxes anymore. We submit our declaration of, you know, independence from you guys. And then they have to wait months because she has to get on a boat to go over to another country. They get all pissed off, write their own letter, and then come back with a bunch of other people. And it's not like this happened, you know, quickly. So you're just waiting. Imagine that. Imagine be like, oh shit, we just sent a letter that's going to piss off the most powerful country in the world. And now we got to wait. And you're Paul Revere. You're like, I'm vigilant as fuck. And I'm going to have one lantern for this and two for this. And it's just a crazy thing to think that is like just how it went. And these are just random ass people, right? They just got riled up about something and they started something kind of crazy.
I never realized that. I mean, looking back now, it all makes sense, but like, I never realized that until you put it in perspective. Like now it'd just be like a slide into a DM or a tweet and be like, we're declaring our independence. Peace.
Oh, totally. Yeah. That's exactly what it was. And they would just sit around and argue about stuff. And then obviously there's much more. I feel like this is like an episode of Drunk History in comparison to what it should actually be. And some actual historians kind of talking about, this is my recollection of what I was told while I was there. But I'll tell you what else was really cool. And I totally recommend this. If you guys are ever up this way, go to Salem, Massachusetts in October. That place is insane, man. And when we got there, we didn't know there was a parade that day. It was some big ass parade. And there are so many people dressed up. That place was packed. Like, it was wild. And to learn about like the witch trials and like what actually happened there, it's kind of nuts, man. It's really creepy.
Halloween, like October-ish time in Salem, it's like their Christmas. Like they go all out.
Totally. They totally do. So it was cool. We had a fun little family trip. Enough of our family trip. We're going to dig into what Andrew's been up to and a really cool sort of unique business model. We see a lot of people that start practices inside gyms, and then it's sort of a stepping stone for them to then move to a standalone location. But Andrew's in a unique facility. It's Cressy's, Eric Cressy's facility. So is it a Cressy Performance Center? Is that what it's called?
It used to be Cressy Performance, and they rebranded it a few years back to Cressy Sports Performance, which it is
okay.
Now.
So Cressy Sports Performance, so super well-known training center, especially in the baseball niche. So kind of a unique opportunity to be in an area where there's a lot of flow of professional high-level athletes and collaboration with really high-level coaches. So you know, what Andrew's been able to do is actually grow, you know, to multiple providers within the gym and be able to actually grow his business without having to step out and get his own standalone space. So tell me this, man, we'll kind of dig into, you know, a little bit of what you're doing and what's going on, but I'm interested in how you develop the relationship to begin with Eric Cressy and his group, and what that looked like, as well as like, how long did that take? Cause I always find it funny. People are like, oh, of course, cause he knows this guy. It's like, no, what's the backstory? Like how long did that take?
Well, first off, thank you for having me. I appreciate coming on. Even it's my second time around the podcast. So
put that belt up real quick. Let everybody see that belt. You're wearing it. He carries this around with him. Every patient gets bopped in the head with this when he's doing a manipulation of their neck and just
if you don't do your exercise, you get smacked to the belt.
So that's the belt, but just give some context. That's the belt for winning our MVP award, which is the most progress made in a 6-month period. Andrew won that. What year was that?
That was 2019. So right. I remember sitting in Dallas in April of 2019 at my first ever mastermind event and saw that Clay won it. And I'm like, I'm winning that fucking belt.
You get that belt.
And the next 6 months was a blur because it was like crazy hours and days, but it was all worth it.
Yeah. No. So congratulations on that. That's a difficult thing to do because there's a lot of people that are trying really hard to get that sucker. So you got one, handful of other people do. But yeah, man, I'm interested. What did that look like? How did the relationship develop and how long did it take?
Yeah, no, that's, I like talking about this stuff because it allows me to reflect. It really goes all the way back to college. Like my junior year, not assigned, but I chose to live with one of my junior year roommate who I played baseball with. And the importance of that is because a few years later when I moved home, because I grew up about 15, 20 minutes from the gym, and it wasn't open when I was in high school and beginning of college. My junior year college roommate says, oh, you're like 15 to 20 minutes from Cressy's. You should go train there. And I was like, okay. And I was like 5 months coming off of an ACL reconstruction. And I was like, all right, I'll call up, see what they're all about. So I showed up in like October of 2008. And before that, I think it was either a Saturday or a Monday or whatever, but I came by and just saw the facility. I'm like, this place is electric. This is awesome. So just wanted to like stay in shape and, you know, get stronger. No real like athletic aspirations after that. But so started training there here in 2008. And, you know, I think over a 2-year window, like Eric was like, oh, do you want to come in and do, you know, PT on a Saturday, just small little thing. And being 25, 24, 25 at the time, I'm like, I'm more worried about where I'm going out on Saturday night than, right. than starting a business. So, kind of just brushed it off. And then it was 9 years after starting here at CSP, and they had moved multiple locations inside of the complex we're in now. And I was up here Erica just got back from Florida. It was April of 2017. And he's like, hey, we want to do PT in here. We want you. I was like, when can I start? So gave my notice in June of 17 at my, you know, outpatient ortho clinic, left in July, started doing home health 5 days a week to supplement my income. And then over a 10-month period, I went from one day a week to quitting my full-time job and being here by myself, or being here full-time and creating a business that I've hired admins, I've hired staff PTs, and we've done well. It's great to see how far we've come.
Yeah. You know, and to put that in perspective, so you're talking like 10-year history basically before you opened your practice within the facility. So, I mean, it really just started out with, you just wanted to train. right? You're looking for a place to train. And I think in a lot of ways it's like, hey, you know, like these people seem legit. Like I want to be a part of that. I want to stay in shape. You're right. There's a certain energy in some of these facilities you go into and you're like, man, like something's different here. Like there's something different going on. And it's kind of hard to put your finger on, but what would you say? And for the people that don't know who Eric Cresti is, go check out his stuff, especially if you work with anybody that's like an overhead athlete. I think he has really, really solid stuff. On the performance side in particular, but what would you say that the difference is of like, what do they do that's special? Like that really makes the facility kind of stand out?
I mean, obviously they have a specific niche in baseball, and I mean, they train other athletes too. So it's not just like baseball. I mean, that's a good amount, but like they have field hockey, soccer, lacrosse, like there's all these different types of athletes that come through here, but baseball is their niche. I think early on, like I've talked to Pete and Pete at Eric's business partner about this at length, is that there was no one working with that population back in 2007. A baseball player might have gone to PT for, you know, a shoulder injury, but no one really understood the demand specific to the throwing athlete. So they were really filling a need in the marketplace of, all right, you know, this is a specific population that needs to be, you know, kind of catered to and addressed. It's not just like a typical shoulder pain athlete. So that was how it all kind of started. And then, you know, meeting with local orthopedic surgeons and working with the health and wellness field of like, hey, this is how you need to like approach an overhead athlete due to the specific demands that are placed upon them. So I think if you were ever to come into the facility, you'd see people, you know, lifting weights and deadlifting and squatting and lunging and stuff you would see in a typical gym, but the assessment and also the programming is specific towards the demands of the baseball player and what their body needs to be able to do, especially rotationally and for pitchers. So that's really where they've, you know, kind of been able to work with the baseball population.
Yeah. I think they do a really good job of dominating a niche, you know, like there's probably few people that are even trying to do like baseball performance anywhere around them. It just kind of probably would be very difficult to do. And for you being in this facility, there's obviously pros and cons with working inside of, you know, someone else's business, but it's a fairly unique setup. What would you say the pros and cons are of, you know, having your office, your business inside a performance, you know, center like you have?
There's definitely a lot of pros, and I would say like the opportunity to work, I mean, alongside amazing strength conditioning coaches, like to be completely honest, like I've learned so much from the staff here, and Eric has surrounded, you know, has built a team around him that is amazing. Like obviously his name is on the business, but you know, he has hired and brought on amazing strength conditioning coaches that, you know, when he's in Florida, like, or he's not here, like he has a group of a team that, you know, continues to provide great quality service. And that's a great lesson I've learned about scaling my own business of like, all right, surround yourself with really smart people that can help out more people. You can't just see everybody like grow and scale so you can help as many people as possible. So I just hope I provide them with enough, you know, I don't want to say help, but more like, you know, value than, you know, they've given me so much to, you know, help shape my career. I mean, being around Pete and Eric, like Pete's up is his business partner and he's here full time. And I mean, just from a business side of things, the guy has an MBA from Babson and he's not a typical landlord. Like I can go into his office and just ask a business question that, you know, a landlord shouldn't. It would normally be just transactional. Here's the check. Have a nice day. But like, it's if, you know, if I'm successful, they're successful and vice versa. So that if, you know, like I walk in and I have a question, or we're always asking each other, what are you reading? And, you know, we're both very similar. We both own businesses. We both have wives and kids. Like, so we're on a similar level in our lives so that it's a great relationship there where we can kind of be professional colleagues and have a more unique conversation. I mean, being inside of a space like this, like another pro is like, we get to work with just awesome people, like people that, you know, are like we talk about in the group of like, you know, people that want to get better and want to, you know, be better with health and wellness and really like have a bigger goal in mind versus just, you know, I just want to get out of pain. and seeing how well people do. I'm grateful every day to be in a position where like I can work with awesome individuals. And I was telling my new hire Connor this, I'm like, we have great people, like, and I firmly believe that, not just our team and the strength and conditioning staff here, but also the people we get to work with. Plus like really out on a training floor, like, and seeing like, you know, being able to utilize all we need to from a strength conditioning perspective, but also like being around these athletes, even if we're not working with them, like particularly just like having that clubhouse camaraderie and like being around the athletes all different times of the day. And it's great. And I'm listening to loud, good music. Like just, it's not like a typical office where like it's quiet, super quiet and like that. So it's, there's a lot of like pluses to being here. And like, again, I remind myself not to take it for granted because I've been here quite a while. It's just, I'm grateful for this opportunity to be here and be around a great team. Yeah. We haven't even looked into the positive ramifications of like an athlete rehabbing on the table and being around other athletes who are training and lifting and running. It's just the positive psychological impact that has. I wrote a blog post for Pete a while ago about that, of like three reasons we're in the chaos on the training floor. And it's just a lot of great things going on.
I think that's a great point, man. I mean, a couple of things you brought up. Number one, the value of the population that we get to work with is just like one of the best parts. And I think that people, you almost have to like feel or put yourself in a setting where you're working in with a population that, you know, if it's high percentage of work comp or personal injuries, where maybe they don't want to get better. And this is something that frustrated me a lot in the Army with people that were on profiles and going through medical board processes. They're incentivized to not get better, you know? And so that can be very frustrating. You never really have to second guess that with the population you work with. So it's great because, you know they're going to, you know, give you a lot of effort, which I think for most of us is that's just all we really want, is to make sure that like what we're doing, is it working because, you know, or is not working because we're not doing the right thing, or is not working because you don't want it to work, right? And so like that, you take that out of the equation. But I think the other thing you said is like the environment is super healthy, right? I mean, I remember, you know, Brandon, my brother-in-law, he played football at Purdue. He tore his ACL during a game against Iowa. And so he was rehabbing all by himself in most cases, isolated from the team. It was a really difficult, you know, thing to do to a young athlete, take them away from all of that, just put them in a training room with a bunch of people that they don't know. And, you know, it's cool that the environment that you're in, it's like, again, it's still like that positive locker room environment. And that's probably huge for them from a mental standpoint as they're going through like a really challenging, you know, injury. So I'm sure you guys, you know, see that quite a bit as well. Is that something that they like talk about? Is that like they're intentionally trying to work on that? I'm interested. Is like, or how much of that just happens because of, you know, the environment they've created?
I would say the latter. I mean, it's kind of by default in that, like, you know, we have clients on the table, like we're still going to get up and go out in the gym and do stuff. Like if you're an ACL or, you know, you're on crutches and a leg brace or whatever. Like I had a girl who had two foot surgeries, and I got her up and like, we're doing like single leg squats to a bench on her, you know, her non-involved side, and then got her on the rower using her non-involved side to like get a workout in. And I think it just kind of happens organically that like, all right, you're not going to be stuck in this little area. We're going to get off the table. We're going to go do some stuff. And like, it really empowers them. Like, hey, listen, like there is a lot I can do, not what I can't do. And it's so exciting when you can see the look on the person's face, like when they feel like there's hope.
Sure. No, that's cool, man. Tell me a little bit about the pro athlete side of things. You know, this is something that we definitely get a lot of questions with, you know, some pro athletes come people's way, and it's not that many of them. And they're like, man, should I take work comp? And I think that's for a lot of people, they may not even realize that, you know, if they're hurt, the team has work comp insurance. In some cases they pay out of pocket depending on the athlete, but like, can you explain that process a little bit with the professional athletes, at least when it comes to baseball with what you guys are working with?
Yeah, that's been a great, you know, opportunity for me to be inside this facility. I've had, you know, got to work with the guys, professional athletes in the NFL, NHL, MLB. And it's been great to be here, cause I probably would have never had that opportunity. So it's been really great to like have that ability to do that. And I think what a lot of people think it's like, oh, they're just playing a sport. I'm like, no, this is their livelihood. Like, right. This is how they pay their bills. And like, a lot of people think, oh, they get paid so much money. And I'm like, some people do, but some people make league minimum. And, you know, that's, they're going to make, do the best that they can in a finite amount of time, because eventually the career will be over. So it's having the opportunity to help an athlete come back from an injury, especially for that, and like be able to help them and provide their, for them, for their family, is, it's been great to have. And it's, you know, we can specifically work on the demands of what their sport entails. To the work comp side of things, yeah, you said it best, like most teams have a work comp policy so that the client has been hurt, you know, on the field of play. So some of those teams will have, you know, the work comp policy cover it. It really depends. Like, it's, you kind of get in the weeds when you talk about it, of like, you have to like negotiate with the work comp company and the rates and that type of stuff. I mean, before, like, we should have been charging more, like we've talked about many times, but I looked at it as just a cool opportunity to, you know, be able to work with this population. So I was okay with a few of them that weren't at our full rate, due to the work comp dictating that. But every year we connect with the work comp insurance company and negotiate a fair market rate so that, you know, it is worth our while. But at the end of the day, I looked at it as a cool opportunity. And if I said no, like, I don't know, you know, what would have happened if I didn't.
Yeah. Especially I would assume with the volume side of like post-ops, you know, it's something that, we have not, gone in network with any, work comp, but we don't see that high of a volume of athletes. If we do, they typically are coming to us because they don't want to go through work comp. Like, they're working on something that maybe they're up to a contract year or something like that. It's just, it's an interesting team dynamic that I never really knew.
It's anyone who's not working in that environment may have a difficult time understanding, because like, some guys will come just see us for hands-on work and they want to pay themselves, and right, they don't want the team to know, because this is a whole other conversation of how, you know, like, some teams will see that as a liability. It's like, no, they're being proactive and taking care of themselves. So right. I think it's an investment when they do that stuff. So we have a decent amount of guys that we work with in that regard. And I have to remember too, like, we don't have a ton of like these cases where like, this is only typically during the off season, September, October to like January, February. And it's, yeah, some guys just, yeah, I'll take care of this myself. Let's just work together, you and me.
Yeah. Yeah. It is interesting. We had an athlete, an NFL guy, that was like in a contract year, and he wanted nothing to do with any of their team, like medical staff. And, you know, I always thought that was interesting, because he was like, no, I don't, like, they work for the team. I want them to know what I'm working on, you know, like, it's, and yep. it's kind of funny when you look at it, because it is a business, right? I mean, it's just a business. The team wants to get the best player for the least amount of money they can. The player wants to get as much money as they can, and their body's their vehicle to, you know, make an income. So it's kind of an interesting environment with baseball in particular. What are you guys seeing as far as, you know, the business kind of model works, right? So, you know, if you have an athlete, and this is a niche that I think is, you're seeing a lot more people kind of move towards with the overhead athlete, especially baseball is, you know, starting to become a lot more popular. But like, what are you kind of working on primarily? What are you seeing the most of as far as injuries go? And what do you think about ongoing kind of care options that exist for continuity offerings for people that are working, you know, within that niche of baseball?
Yeah. I mean, you're going to see a majority of shoulder, elbow. That's like the big stuff, and not necessarily, you know, you'll have some post-ops due to the demands of the sport and you know, structures just breaking down and needing surgical intervention. But, you know, a lot of guys, oh, my shoulder's bothering me, my elbow, my forearm. Those are the biggest things. I mean, you'll definitely get like the low backs and the, you know, the hip and that type of stuff. But those are the two biggest joints that you're going to see. And I think what we've always done is try to empower the athlete to take care of themselves, because when an athlete is in season with their team, as you just stated, like, they have to be careful with their asks. Like, they have to be careful, like, going to the treatment room, which is, it's a shame that this is how the model is. But like, they'd be careful of like, hey, I want to go in and get soft tissue work, or I need some, get this or that. Cause some organizations will say, oh, we're going to flag you if you come in so many times. And it's like, so what I was just like, all right, let's just teach them how to take care of themselves, whether it be, you know, self soft tissue work with like a lacrosse ball or a Hypervolt or a Theragun, and giving them a warm up program so that they can do to help keep themselves in the best possible shape. And also checking in with them during the season, like, hey, how things going? How you feeling? Like, what do you need? Like, that way, when they come in for the off season, like, you know, we can really hit the ground running and kind of, you know, right the ship. And it's an interesting thing in the physical therapy world where, you know, oh, you shouldn't have to dry needle someone's lat to get them to feel better or this or that. They should be able to take care of themselves 100%. And my argument with that is that these athletes are beating themselves up every time they throw or hit, that they're gonna, you know, need consistent treatment because the amount of, I don't say trauma for lack of a better word, they're placing on their body needs to be managed. So, you know, using a lacrosse ball or a percussion gun, like, can only get you so far. So I think it's teaching them how to take care of themselves, but also like, hey, listen, this is important to your point about the continuity is we'll have guys like that'll come in once a week and maybe ramp up as they start throwing, or, you know, all right, I want to come see you once a month just to stay on top of stuff. And they really value that we can try to help keep them out there and keep them healthy.
Yeah. You bring up a great point too, of it's, like the traditional world and this world, they're not really the same in terms of like how you provide care. I had a really good conversation with Toko Wynn about this, who, you know, he runs Institute of Athlete Regeneration, and he works with a ton of baseball players as well. And, you know, what he brought up, what I thought was interesting was like the soft tissue side is one thing, but the confidence side mentally is the other side that's really valuable, that a lot of these players, you know, continually want to work with him on, is because, you know, if they feel confident that, you know, this person, you know, is working on their arm or whatever it might be, and that they say like, you're good to go, just a little bit of soreness, whatever it is, you know, like, and they're confidently making that you know, assessment, they feel a lot better going into whatever sporting event they're going to go into. And, you know, what he said was like, that's like when he gets called in to do like on-site consulting, this, you know, just, you know, where they're flying him in or something like that. He's like, 9 times out of 10, you know, a lot of it is, it's not like they haven't heard whatever before. They want to have a guy's going to come in and be able to like explain to them, have trust with them that they're, that they can do whatever, you know, they need to do on the field, or that he shouldn't, you know, and then for them to be able to understand that and communicate that. So, you know, I think for you, the ongoing stuff, I think is great from a business side, but also, it's like, I don't know why there's this dirty word of maintenance with our profession. It's like, if people want that and they feel better with it and there's value associated with it, it's, you know, I don't know what it is. It's just not the insurance model typically for what people typically practice it.
It's, yeah, you hit the nail right on the head. It's like, I didn't really think about the mental side of it. I mean, I always do, but that in particular of like, you know, if the athlete has confidence to go out there and throw a bullpen and they feel good and they feel pain-free, like, that's sometimes even better because, like, you know, they may not move the best, but they can go out and perform and feel confident and provide, you know, for their team and what they need to be able to do. It's huge. And I was talking with one of my guys about this, and I'm like, oh, you should just be able to take care of yourself after a bullpen. I was saying this sarcastically. Oh, after your bullpen, like, I shouldn't have to, you know, dry needle you. And he's like, yeah, that's not going to work. So it's, especially when they feel better and they move better, and it's like their arm or their elbow or whatever the joint is, just it's really important for them. And it's, I appreciate the opportunity to be able to help them with that.
Yeah. And it's also financially worth it in a lot of ways. I mean, imagine squeezing out just one more year, you know, of playing, you know, professional sport. Like, that's massive in terms of, you know, cause it's not a long shelf life for these guys. Maybe baseball is a little bit longer than football, obviously, or something that's a little more, you know, if you're an NFL running back, like, you got a short shelf life versus, you know, maybe like a relief pitcher in comparison, but even still it's short, right? And then from there, like, a lot of what they're able to make playing these sports, you know, it's not like that goes into their 50s or whatever. So, you know, an extra year for them can be a huge difference maker in terms of like how much they're actually able to make before they move on to whatever they're going to do, you know, after that. You know, one thing that I did want to bring up with you, because I think a lot of people struggle with this, and I would assume that you probably did or have more so because of the location. But when you scale past yourself, when you brought your first provider on, and really the other providers that you have, like, how difficult was that transition from everybody, you know, like, hey, you got to go see Andrew, you know, or like, oh, I got, you got to go see my guy. Like if Eric's like, oh, go see my guy, Andrew. And you're like, well, now you got to see Johnny or whatever, you know, the person's name is that you brought on. What was that transition like to move past you being the man to like your company being what people are moving towards working with?
It's, I think you've mentioned it before in other podcasts. It's sometimes more challenging than starting a business.
Right.
It's, and you can get two types of people. You can have the egotistical one who just wants to see everybody and burn everything else down around them. Or you have to just, you know, you have the confidence that you bring on good people that can complement what you do and are better than you. Like my two colleagues right now, Julie and Connor, like they, I can confidently say they're better than me. Otherwise I wouldn't have brought them on. And when people, you know, group introduction me on a text or like an email, like, hey, see my brother or my colleague or whatever. Listen, like, I appreciate that. And I know so-and-so told you to see me, but you got to go see my colleague. They're that much better. I would see them from my shoulder or my knee. And I think having that, the confidence and the being honest with people and the humility of it, of saying, go see my colleague. Like I have good people around me. I think people just want that trust that like, hey, you're going to put them in the right direction. And I mean, I want to be able to help as many people as possible. That doesn't necessarily mean I have to treat them. Like we can hire a great team and bring on great people to help as many people as possible. So it was definitely a challenge. But like we made sure to hire really solid people first, like hire, as I've learned from Pete, hire for fit. Because you can train somebody up clinically, but you can't train someone not to be an asshole. So you can, so we have a great team around me and I have the utmost confidence. So it was a challenge, but I think we've done well with it.
I think it's one of the harder, yeah, transitions just for people in general, right? Cause they work so hard to build their reputation up. And then, you know, once they have, then they have to start to kind of slide people over to other practitioners. And there can be some resistance associated with that, you know, with certain patients that just don't want to do it. Right. And it's the way that maybe your referral sources are teeing them up for you in a lot of ways to begin with. But for where you're at now, right, you're leading this group, right? So you're not treating everybody. You're not necessarily like, you know, quite as involved in the clinical side. What have you found has been like the kind of most difficult part of this transition now, which is really moving into like leading the group that you have and growing the business, you know, to where you want it to be ultimately?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think isn't touched upon a lot, you know, in companies and you know, when you're leading a team. But you said it best, it's like leading the team. Like I was a former captain for high school sports. So I have a little bit of experience and I've worked in management before, but you know, learning how to communicate, like which can carry over to your wife, your kids, your team or your business, that you need to like have that. And you taught me this, that one-on-one time, like I have one-on-one meetings with my team every week. Like, unless someone's on vacation, it's non-negotiable. Like we meet for 45 straight minutes, one-on-one FaceTime to show them I still give a shit. And I'm there to listen to any of their personal, professional concerns, you know, anything they have questions about, like it's their time to use how they will. And I've really been focused on the psychology of like listening and communication and really trying to like, you know, how I talk to them, not necessarily what I talk about. And I've read a lot of great books about this and I'm still learning. But it just shows like the employee that the employer still cares and it's not just a transactional relationship. That's been the hardest part. It's like just really dialing that in and really getting focused on it.
Yeah, I think that the communication side is huge, right? Because in your case, you know, or really anybody, it's not necessarily what you're talking about. Oftentimes it's how you deliver it. We took our team through, it's called the Berkman assessment. It's actually like one of our patients was sort of this serial tech entrepreneur. And he's like, every company I start, we go through this Berkman assessment, right? Which is really in-depth communication assessment of your entire staff. And we did like a facilitation day where we brought these two guys in and they went through everybody's profiles because they came in twice. So two separate days over about a month in between. And what it is basically, it's how you communicate, but how you want to be communicated to is what it looks at. So, and it can be vastly different, right? Like for me, like I'm pretty direct with people. But I'm cool if you're direct with me, but other people, they might communicate and be direct with somebody, but that's not how they like to be communicated with. And they had us basically stand on this little, spectrum they created for us. And so it'd be like, you're like on one end or the other. And some people were kind of in the middle, but it was interesting. They had us like move around this and stand where we were at on these different variables. And we were like very different in a lot of ways. And it was really helpful to learn that, even though, you know, like it's not like we look at the Berkman assessment before we talk to anybody, although we probably should, but understanding that like people just, that the way you communicate is not necessarily the way that people want to be talked to or engaged with, and like listening to them and asking questions. And like, it's time intensive. It takes time. Right. So like, I think at scale, this is why you see it's so difficult when you have, I mean, imagine having like eight clinicians, you can't do all that. Right. So then you have to train somebody else to take over that role. And then you're doing that with them, and then it disseminates down. So I think it's a challenge, man, for everybody. And it sounds like you're doing a really good job of initially like getting to continue that one-on-one contact.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm doing my best with it. It definitely evolves over time. And it's definitely the words you use, as you've talked about before, tonality and body language and all those things. And I think at the end of the day too, show that you care, but also like, if you want someone to do something, you don't just tell them to do it. Like, show it how it'll benefit them and their goals and like what they want to accomplish. Like, if you just say, oh, I want you to do this because it's going to make more money, well, that's not really going to like motivate them. Like, hey, listen, it would be great if you did this because it's going to help you get that specific caseload that you want to treat, because I know how much that is important and it's valuable to you. So I'm definitely like continuing to evolve and like get better at that. But that's been hugely important, especially having an admin, billing manager, and two staff PTs.
Yeah. Well, you said you read a couple of books recently that were helpful. What books were you reading? Do you have any recommendations on the leadership side?
Jocko Willink just wrote Leadership Strategy and Tactics. It was, I think, the third book from Dichotomy of Leadership and Extreme Ownership. That was really good. It just talked about, how do you speak to your superiors? How do you speak to people on your playing field? And how do you speak to like maybe like employees, like if you're the employer? And that was really helpful. I'm trying to think, like I'm drawing a blank on the other ones right now, but
it's a good one though. I like his stuff a lot. I mean, I think that his stuff is a little more, obviously more militaristic, right? And for some people that resonates a lot with them, and for others, maybe it's not quite as good, of a fit as far as like a communication leadership book goes. But I mean, I think that's the biggest thing that I've taken away from my time, in particular in the Army, was there's leaders that you like in that environment. People don't have a choice; they have to listen to you. Like that's the thing. Like we have civilian for-profit businesses. People could literally just be like, I'm done with this, I'm leaving. You can't just do that in the Army or the Air Force or whatever. Like in the military, you can't do that. So there's a lot of dicks. There's a lot of assholes that are just like, they know that. And so like their approach is like very hard, like top down, do what I say, like that's it, right? And in some cases, maybe that's exactly what they need to do. My favorite leaders were always the ones that just like gave a shit about people. Like they were, you know, they just were aware of what was going on. They wanted to make sure their people were taken care of. And what they got, what I noticed was they got people that wanted to work with them without being forced to do so. And I honestly believe would go much further, you know, than somebody that like was fearful, right, of what was going to happen to them versus like not wanting to let somebody down because you respect them. So I think that's like the biggest difference that I've found, which is gaining respect from people is difficult. It's time intensive, and you can't fake it, right? Like you really have to like develop those relationships.
Like I don't see as many clients as my staff does, but I am exhausted like at the end of the day, because sure. it's not just like the one-on-one, like, or the, you know, treating clients. It takes a lot of mental bandwidth to do that. And if it was easy, everybody would do it, and not everybody does. So but I do find it's really valuable. Like, you know, I had one of my employees resign recently, and, you know, just for different reasons. And he even says, like, you give a shit, like, you really care. And I was like, oh, I do, because I want to have a good team around me. Like, I want people to enjoy coming in and have this be, you know, a space that they enjoy coming, not just have the Sunday scaries or the Monday morning, like, oh geez, like, I got to go to work. So it's, yeah. I'm really, like, ever since the Dallas event, and I mean, I was like this before, but I'm really, like, want to dive deep on the culture stuff and, like, mission, vision, values. Cause, like, I was listening to a podcast where it's like, a salary will bring people to you, culture will keep them here. So it's, you know, they may not make as much as, like, they could somewhere else, like, after working for you, but, like, what's going to keep them here?
Well said, man. I mean, I completely agree with that. You see people that take less money to take a job, because they like the culture, you know? I was watching this, Pixar, like, mini series on Inside. I don't know if you've seen this on Disney Plus, but it's like, it's fascinating, right? We watch everything on Disney Plus, but there's, I think it's like a 12-part series where they follow, like, the pastry chef of Pixar around. They follow, like, the person that's doing, like, character development and graphic design and all these things. And what's so interesting is, like, I think when you find really good companies, there's a culture that exists that is, independent of the benefits, independent of the salary, right? It's like, it's a community. It's a place where people feel like they're a part of something. Like, I feel like everybody in that documentary, they're, like, really proud, you know, to say that they work there or that they do this thing there or whatever it might be. And, it's a really interesting organization. I think we can take, you know, little pieces of that. Obviously we're not huge like a Pixar is or whatever, but you know, if people are, like, proud to say they work, you know, at the company that you're at, like, that's huge. It goes a long way. And I mean, money in a lot of ways is, like, it's important, but after a certain amount, it's for people to be miserable to make, you know, slightly more. I most people, I don't think will take that trade-off unless they had to.
And I can't take all the credit for this. Like, I feel like CSP, like, we have a great team here, and I talk like we're one business place. Like, there's three businesses inside of CSP, me, my business, massage service, and then CSP. And I don't feel like we're, like, in a silo. Like, I feel like part of a big team, and, like,
right,
we all joke and have a good time. And, like, I feel like the culture that CSP has curated has, like, bled into our business, and it's really helped us. And it's, you want to be a part of something bigger and have it in the team that we have here. We just, everyone gels really well together, and it's, yeah.
That's cool. Well, if people want to learn more about what you got going on, where can they find out more? Where could they, you know, maybe touch base, you reach out if they, you know, if they want to connect you with somebody or, find out next time you're hiring so they can get a cool job at a cool place.
Yeah. We're always looking to expand and, you know, continue to help as many people. So if you just go on Move Strong Physical Therapy, our Instagram page, I still actually look at the Instagram, so it's not someone else. I mean, Julie does help me run it, but I still respond to the DMs. My email, AndrewMilletPT@gmail.com. Yeah, we're always just looking to grow and, you know, expand and help as many athletes and clients as possible.
Cool. Well, man, I appreciate the time. Appreciate you sharing a little bit about the model you have. It's, you know, unique. You've done a great job with it, and I hope a lot of people learn, you know, from this. So yeah, man, I appreciate your time. I know you woofed down lunch there as fast as you could. And I appreciate you, taking that salad down in like a minute. That was impressive.
Salad with chicken on it.
Oh yeah. Even more impressive. You had a hell of a set of jaws on you there, but, all right, guys. Well, thanks so much for listening. As always, we'll catch you next week. Hey, real quick before you go, I just want to say thank you so much for listening to this podcast, and I would love it if you got involved in the conversation. So this is a one-way channel. I'd love to hear back from you. I'd love to get you into the group that we have formed on Facebook. Our PT Entrepreneurs Facebook group has about 4,000 clinicians in there that are literally changing the face of our profession. I'd love for you to join the conversation, get connected with other clinicians all over the country. I do live trainings in there with Eve Gigi every single week, and we share resources that we don't share anywhere else outside of that group. So if you're serious about being a PT entrepreneur, a clinical rainmaker, head to that group, get signed up. Go to facebook.com/groups/PT Entrepreneur, or go to Facebook and just search for PT Entrepreneur, and we're going to be the only group that pops up under that name.